We hope you enjoy this episode of the Modern Divorce Podcast. But first, an important message for our listeners.
Embarking on a new chapter? Zach Knutzman of the Darwin Wall team at Realty One Group is your go-to real estate expert in Arizona, specializing in guiding couples and families through their real estate needs while experiencing a divorce. Modern Law's trusted partner, Zach, brings expertise, confidence, and compassion to your real estate journey. Let him help you navigate this challenging time. Zach Knutzman, your modern solution in real estate. Visit ZachSellsAZ.com to get started. Welcome to the Modern Divorce Podcast. I am your host, Billy Taurasio, Arizona Family Law, and today is another special edition divorce podcast with Eric Hebert. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm doing very good, thank you. How are you?
Doing great. So Eric has emerged as a community activist against youth violence here in the East Valley. And he kind of came out of nowhere speaking at a council meeting where he divulged that he was formerly in a gang, formerly incarcerated, and thought he had a voice to bring to the table. Is that right?
Correct.
And then I saw you on the town hall, the 12 News town hall. I really appreciated your insights, and I definitely wanted to know more. So I'm guessing that our audience does as well.
Okay.
So
yeah, I spoke at the town hall meeting just honestly because it seemed like so many people were disconnected from what was actually happening because it is Gilbert. So, I mean, it's a little bit different than kind of like where I grew up. It was a little rougher. And so these things happened a little bit more frequently, not like this, obviously, because like we're in a completely new day and age with social media, people recording stuff, and that obviously exacerbates things. But yeah, I just got up because I felt like there was a disconnect in between the parents and the children and the community and the leaders. So I just wanted to step in and kind of be a voice to try to bring everybody together because I have sort of been on all sides of things in my lifetime. So I do believe that I can bring some perspective to the situation.
Well, I'd like to know what your thoughts are and how your history has impacted your perspective. So as you know, we've got a massive, what feels like massive teen violence issue in the East Valley. What do you think is going on?
I think what's going on is that I think families are just disconnected, obviously, and that comes from people being too busy, people just sitting on social media. We kind of live in a day where people really try to honor individualism and push people towards individualism, and I can do this on my own and this and that. So I feel like it just kind of tears at the fabric of society. I'm sorry, what was the question? The direct question?
The question was, what do you think is the cause of this teen violence?
I think it's a disconnect in the families. It's a disconnect in the families and community. It starts at home. It really starts with each and every one of us. So,
yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. There are more demands on our time as parents than probably there ever has been. So you really do have to go out of your way to really create a routine that allows for consistent check-ins, right?
Correct.
Which is not easy.
Yes. And I mean, I personally have not been a person that's been able to really achieve that work-life balance. So my history is I went into prison when I was 18 years old for 18 years. I got out when I was 34. I kind of hit the ground running right away. I got into a relationship with a girl that I wrote for 6 months. We lived together. I started a business. It was successful. But I really just did all these things really fast. I wasn't thinking them through. I wasn't thinking big picture. I was just, I believe I was probably just trying to make up for lost time and get some things done. What I found in I've been out for almost 10 years now. And what I found about 6 years into it, I completely just broke down, almost went mentally insane, and almost ended up back in prison. And I think a lot of that has to do with just, so what, during that time, I found that my connection with my son was actually slipping away because I was at work. I owned a business. I had a lot of employees. So I just had, my attention had to go everywhere else, but to myself or my kid, actually, or the people most important in my life. So there's definitely that going on. And I think that people don't, they don't know how to achieve the work-life balance. And unfortunately, just due to the economy and things like that, it's really hard to achieve it.
Were you in prison here in Arizona?
I was, yes.
Okay. Which prison were you in?
I was in, so basically when you go in, they will put you at whatever level yard you're at. I started on a high medium yard in Tucson, and within months I was in maximum security for an assault. And that was kind of the route I really wanted to go. You know, it was like, that's climbing the ladder in there. That's going to the top in there is everything that you shouldn't do out here. So,
okay.
And so I was all over. I mean, I've been all over the state. I did mostly time in maximum security and on 4 yards. I made it to a 3 yard one time.
What do you think would have made a difference when, so you were a teenager who at 18 got put away for 18 years. So What did you need prior to the age of 18? What would have made a difference and an impact for you?
I think just love, you know, having love and support and attention. That's really what I think it comes down to. That's what I think every kid needs. They need love, support, and attention. Like, they constantly need watering.
Definitely. Definitely. And what's so surprising about the current teen violence issue is that they come from quote unquote good families, you know, families with money, parents who seem to be checked in. At least one parent is a school principal. So you would expect that these kids would be getting what they need at home. Gilbert has one of the highest median incomes in the state. It's a affluent, prosperous area. And usually we think affluence and prosperousness with, you know, family values.
Yeah. So, I mean, I almost compare what's going on in Gilbert today, and nothing against Gilbert. I love the East Valley of Arizona. I personally love Mesa and Apache Junction just because of the scenery. But I love Arizona in general. So this isn't to say anything bad about anybody, but I kind of compare with the situation that's happening now in Gilbert. It's almost like Hollywood. You know, like, we're all aware of how fucked up the kids in Hollywood are, how you know, they basically were just born into all this money. They didn't have to strive for anything. They didn't have to do anything hard. They were just kind of given everything, which obviously creates entitlement. You have, you know, I mean, we could probably pull numerous stories that we all know from Hollywood about people getting off because they have money, or people getting a less sentence than they have money. That's exactly what's going on here in Gilbert. So, you know, people can say, yeah, you know, it's this affluent thing on the surface, and this person's this and this. Well, that stuff comes at a high price. It comes at a very, very high price to maintain your affluent status. And I think if that's what you're trying to achieve, you're missing out. You're lacking something that you need to give to your kid or your community or your spouse or whoever. So,
what role do you think drugs play in what we're seeing?
I believe they probably play a huge role. I'm honestly not as educated on this case as my fiance is, but it sounds like drugs are pretty prevalent in the whole thing. I know that alcohol has been prevalent in it from some of the videos I've seen. So it's a recipe for disaster.
And when you were young, you said you were in a gang. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So when I was 14, I was almost 15 years old, and I was living in Arizona. I was 14 years old, and I had a kid. I had a kid, and my mom, for whatever reason, didn't think that I was the father of this kid. So about a month or two before he was born, she moved me out of state to Illinois. So I went back to Illinois. That's where I was born at. And I lived with my mom and my sister for a while. My mom took off somewhere. I don't know where she went. And at that time, I lived in a suburb of Chicago and really nothing to do. Just ran the streets, and I joined a gang called the Satan Disciples. And from there, I ended up running around, running away from home. I ended up in a foster home for a few days because I just didn't want to be around my mom. And I ended up doing a home invasion and ended up going to juvenile prison for that for about a year and a half in St. Charles and Valley View in Illinois. So I was in that gang. And then, so I went through juvenile and that gang. And then when I got out, my mom moved me back here to Arizona to get me out of the gang. Sure. So then I came back here and I was 17 years old. I came back here in 1996. Within 1 year, I was already on my way to prison for 18 years.
So, okay. And that was not related to gang activity.
That was not related to gang activity. No.
Okay.
That was just, I had just turned 18. I was 18, maybe 2 or 3 weeks when the crime happened. And like I said, my mom moved me out here to get me away from the gang. And then she left a couple months after she was here to go to Florida. And so I was here. I stayed with some friends and I ended up getting back with my ex that had my kid for a while. And I just never really could get going. I never could like get a job because I was young and had a record and I had an anger problem. So then ultimately I just ended up like on the streets and mad and looking for somebody to hurt. And that's ultimately what happened. We robbed a guy and ended up almost killing him and went to prison for that. A friend of mine and I, we went to prison for 18 years for that.
Okay. So what you're describing is not all that different from what we're seeing with our current teens. They're angry. They're looking for people to hurt and they may end up, you know, in this similar position. At least some of them have already done time in the juvenile facilities. Mm-hmm. Tell me how would you describe the juvenile correctional system from your perspective?
Well, I've been to if you go to a juvenile, like when I went to juvenile prison in Illinois, I think it was pretty good for me, the way that they had it structured. But just juvenile detention, where that's where most of these boys go before they're found guilty. It's pretty much just housing. It's housing. They let you out to feed you. They might have a few activities like a little rec yard or maybe weights, probably not weights anymore. I don't know. You're just pretty much in a cell, you know, and you have some other kids there, young boys. Everybody's mad. You know, a lot of people are fatherless. A lot of people have come from broken homes is what I've noticed. If there's a pattern, the biggest pattern is they don't have fathers. And then the second biggest pattern would be just that they come from a broken home in general. And then you have the same thing like the entitlement factor that we're looking at potentially now, or the Hollywood thing that I was describing to you. There's people like that that just never, for whatever reason, they just thought they could do whatever they wanted, you know? And I kind of fall into that category too, because I just always kind of did what I wanted. And yeah.
I think a lot of parents are looking at their teens, and if their teens are out of control or making bad choices, many of them are probably thinking, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
And what are they supposed to do? It's not like we're not in a time where we can, you know, we don't use corporal punishment.
Mm-hmm.
We can't physically restrain teenagers. What would you suggest parents do?
I mean, I don't know. I would say that if it was my kid, I would literally drop everything I'm doing and try to fix that problem, because it's not about me. It's about them. So that's kind of the position I'm in now, where I'm just like, all I care about is ushering in a better generation than what we were. And looking back on the mistakes of our, you know, our previous generation and trying to fix them and not continue that cycle. So I would say as a parent, drop everything, drop every single thing that you're doing and make sure you take care of your kid, you know? And if, and if you're worried about money or this or that, you know, there's a huge community that would rather support you and see your kid grow up and be a good functioning member of society than continue this problem. So I think it's a huge problem and people just need to stop and focus and like get it together.
What I like about your advice is it's not one thing. It's not take away the phone. It's not ground your kids. No. It's not be better at discipline. It's a holistic thing. Drop whatever you're paying attention to and focus all of your attention and resources towards the biggest problem that you have, your out of control teen.
Yep.
It's really good advice.
And I'll go in and I'm going to give you a personal example of what happened in my own life. So, my ex, my son's mom, I have a 9-year-old son. He'll be 9 next month. And he's been through it. So I was with his mom for 3 years and I left her because I decided, you know, I shouldn't have gotten this relationship or whatever. So then I took him to another home where now this was his family. I got married to this lady. She had daughters. And then, you know, we went through that. It didn't work out. And it was actually pretty bad. You know, like he witnessed me yelling a lot because I was just in a bad, you know, state. So, so I got out of that because I was like, it's not good for him. It's not good for me. It's not good for my family. So, and then when I got with my current fiance, everything was good. So we started implementing the rules where we, you know, sit down and eat together and make sure you're doing like, just be very, very involved. And then, but then he would go back to his mom's half the time and he'd come back and he was having problems. And we're just kind of like, what the hell is going on? Well, and I don't think she'll mind me saying this because she's pretty open about her story. His mom ended up for 3 years in a row being on drugs. The third year I said, screw this. I'm going to court. Right. And I'm not a big fan of the courts. But I have had some actual very good experiences in the court lately, both criminal and, whatever that the family court. And anyway, so the, so I ultimately had to take my son away from his mom almost a year ago. And so she went into rehab. He got better. She ended up selling her house, moved to a different place. And just, she's doing amazing. She's completely got her life together and we've all worked together with her. And we're, you know, we're all a big family. My ex, my current fiance, everybody, like her parents. And what we, you know, the reason that we did that was for him. You know, it was for my son. It wasn't because at that time I said, oh shit, well, I have this record. I have you know, whatever. How am I as a father gonna take my kid away from their mom? So we went through the process, did it. And it was really hard to do because I didn't want to take my son's mom to court, but ultimately it helped her and it made us closer as a family. So I think that you got to do the hard stuff. You know, like you have to go through these processes. I'm not saying you have to go to court, but you have to address the issues. If you know there's issues, address them. And so, and where we stand today is just my son's doing amazing in school. He actually was a couple years ago about to get expelled. So, just working with him, we've been able to get him on ADHD medication, which was a big problem with me. I didn't want him to do it because I was kind of against it. But it's just, you have to drop everything for your kids, period. That's all I can say. I don't know what else to say. So now looking back on my life, I'm not angry or bitter or anything like that, but I go, where were these adults when I was a kid, when I was 18 or whatever? And then, you know, it's all of us. It's all of us that's why I spoke up and said something, because people just don't get the whole picture to what's going on. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you bring up a really good point. Many of us are parenting with exes. Many of us have our kids 50% of the time. And I think it's hard for people to know, should I intervene? I know bad things are happening at the other house. Should I intervene? And you said you waited 3 years?
No. Well, no. So for 3 years in a row, she was having a drug problem right around the same time of year, which I want to say was around tax time, his birth. There was something, I don't know what it was, that, but these things started to happen. And no, I took him away out of the house each time it was happening. And then we just, you know, amongst ourselves was like, hey, get your shit together, you know. And there's been times when he had to go over there when I had to get my mind together too, because I was flipping out or whatever.
Well, how do you know when it's time to officially try to take your kids out of their other parents' home? How did you make that call?
His behavior. His behavior, like knowing what we're doing here and knowing the way that we enforce rules and respect and your duties, the things that you have to get done. And when you get, I guess, kickback, or like when you get resistance, when you're asking to do one of those things or just like disrespect, you're kind of like, what the hell is going on? So it's really just paying attention and not being so caught up in your own stuff that you don't have time for that. And I feel like that's really what is happens with a lot of us parents. I've been there. I've stuffed my problems all the way down until they just blew up, you know? And that's all that's going to do if people don't start addressing these issues when they see them.
What you're saying makes so much sense on so many levels. Like, I think the reason that the East Valley has the problem it has is because we refused to see the problem earlier and deal with it. And now we have a huge problem. And it might not have been a huge problem. Preston Lord might not have died if people would have called it what it was earlier and intervened earlier.
So, and again, I want to speak to that. And I'm sure that people from my past could speak to this as well, that if some of the things that I was dealing with or that I stuffed down, if I would have just dealt with them, they would have never turned into the issues that they turned into. People never would have got hurt like they got hurt. You know what I mean? Like, it never would have went that route had I addressed the root of what I was going through. And that is the key to this whole thing. That really is the key to this whole thing. And it's a lot bigger than everybody thinks. And it doesn't happen overnight. It does not happen overnight.
Right.
And so when you see a change, exactly.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's all. That's all I had to say on that.
Well, Eric, I have to tell you, here you are, a felon, a father who had his first child at 14.
Yep.
A guy who's had a pretty rough life. And like, you're dropping some serious truth bombs, some real wisdom.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I really hope that parents listen to this. Many of our listeners come from divorced families. You might know something bad is going on at the other parent's house. Stop putting your head in the sand. And that's the key of what we just heard from Eric. Stop putting your head in the sand. Pay close attention and deal with problems early and often.
Yeah, just, I mean, make noise too. I know a lot of people are scared. Especially when it comes to a kid, just get a team together, get a team of your friends or people in your community together, say what's going on. Like, you know, if you need some help pumping yourself up or whatever to go in, like, you shouldn't, cause it's your kid. You should just be willing to lay it all out there. But, people are very fearful, and that's not for no reason. I mean, that's kind of, I feel like they're doing that to us on purpose, you know, trying to make people fearful. So
the children, you mean?
No. Yeah. The other kids too. They're trying to keep these other kids in fear. And yeah, there's a lot of bullying going on.
There's a lot of bullying. There's a lot of people who are silent. There's a lot of people who don't want other people speaking out. I know I have gotten plenty of people who have said, you need to stop. But stories are important. Like, people's stories are important. What people are experiencing in high school, it's important. And talking about issues and getting in front of them and not sugarcoating them, it's important. And so if we want our community to be better, if we want our families to be better, we got to take your advice.
Yeah, I mean, people need to talk. We have to get in there, discuss things that are painful or people don't like, things that have been swept under the rug forever. It's just, you know, got to deal with them because they're going to keep popping back up.
Eric, thank you so much for your time today and for your leadership in our community. And I also think it's so cool for these kids to see somebody who didn't have an easy teenage years, who had a hard young adult life, showing up as a leader in the community with important things to say. Like, what a role model. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And I just want to say too, that we had a meeting yesterday because we have a little group that we work with, and we would like to see a lot more of the kids come forward and speak. And if they don't want to come forward and speak themselves, there's some of us that would, if they would even write out things that they're going through, things that they would like to see changed in the schools and the community, and they don't want to be identified, we will read them out in the council meetings and stuff like that for them. So their voices can actually start getting heard because they're the ones that matter. And they need to be able to feel comfortable to speak up. And I remember being a kid, not being comfortable to speak up to adults. I don't think I would have went to an adult for anything, you know, not an adult, not a police officer, nobody. So we have to change that relationship somehow as well. That's another message that I wanted to send out.
Right. Your perspective matters. You're seeing things that we adults don't see. We're not in schools right now, right? Most of us. We don't deal with what you deal with or live with what you live with. And we're trying to help you. But if we don't have that perspective, it's going to be harder, or we might miss something. So please speak out. Please reach out. Please write down what you want to share, because it all matters.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate everything you're doing for our community.
Thank you. We appreciate you as well.
Thanks so much for listening to the Modern Divorce Podcast. Remember, anything you've heard today or anything you read online is not the replacement for actual consultation with an attorney and does not create an attorney-client relationship. Even if you called in and we spoke to you, you are anonymous and we don't have your details and you have not become a client of Modern Law. However, we would love to speak with you, or you should seek out the advice of legal counsel or counseling or any other expert near you. And if you have an idea for a show topic or you need to speak with an attorney in Arizona, you can reach me at info@mymodernlaw.com.